How y'all doing, man? It's still time to leave. They got some 8 o'clock meetings. I know that a bunch of y'all could get up there and do my story. You've heard it so many times, so I won't be offended, you know. Man, I want to thank Jared, man. Where you at, bro? That was awesome, man. Let me tell you what, that's great. I mean it, man. That's it takes a man to lay them cards and emotions out on the table. I really got a lot out of it, man. I could really feel it. You know, I get more out of somebody grunting with emotion than some intellectual bullshit I hear in Alcoholics Anonymous, man. That was really good. I mean, I'm dead serious, man. I'm glad I was here to hear that. I really am. You know, I got my GED and all that stuff in prison. Started reading. Somebody gave me a Stephen King book. It was that vampire one, man. I got into that. So I learned to read, and they had a logic class in prison. And I went to check it out. It went kind of like this. I went there, and the guy said, I said, is this a logic class? He says, yeah. I said, what's up with this, man? He says, well, did you have a weed whacker before you came to prison? I said, yeah. He said, then I'd assume you had a yard. I said, you'd be right. He said, and you probably had a house. I said, I did. He said, you had a family. Yep. Wife, kids. Yep. Yeah, I had all that. Then I'd assume you're heterosexual. I said, you'd be right about that, too. So I go back to my cellie there, man, and he said, what's that logic class about, man? I said, hey, it's really cool, man. I said, let me tell you. I said, did you have a weed whacker before you come to prison? He said, no. I said, well, then you're a damn faggot. Not to offend anybody, it's just a joke. Anyhow, man, I tell y'all about my last drunk, man. They tell me I ought to remember that, you know. And I do. I was living over yonder in Drew Park on Manelli Street in a little bitty trailer. Wasn't big enough to swing a cat in, which ain't very big. And here's how glamorous I ended up, man. I would wake up in the morning, and before I went to the bathroom, I was looking for something to drink, smoke, stick, or snort, you know, if there's anything left. I had transferred my parole down here to the Sunshine State, which I goes to show you all the kind of riffraff they got coming down to Florida, right? I had been locked up near about 17 years up in the state of Georgia, and Penitentiary, Reidsville. That's the big house up there in Georgia. That's where the electric chair is. They shut the electric chair down for 10 years, but it's back up again. And anyway, when I went there, it was the most violent prison in America. If you ever saw that old movie, The Longest Yard, with Burt Reynolds, that's Reidsville. That's when, before Jimmy Carter became president, he was governor, he said it was okay to film it there, and it wasn't okay. That's the last thing they wanted at Reidsville, was cameras. And they did have some of the convicts. I wasn't one of them. I got there right after they started filming it. That was in 1973. I was 19 years old. I'd been sentenced to 30 to 45 years up in the Georgia penitentiary system. I got there, and I ended up there with a stop order, where I couldn't go anywhere else. I got in a lot of trouble when I was locked up. I got in a lot of trouble what got me there. But the reason it was the most violent prison was they had just integrated. And people were getting killed pretty much left and right. And so the state of Georgia went against the feds, and they segregated again. They had to send the feds back down there to integrate. And they kept going back and forth. And finally, a guard and three inmates got killed while they were segregated, so they said, well, the hell with it, they're killing each other when they're segregated, so we'll just stick them all together. So that's what was going on there. It was pretty much a war going on. And, you know, you was in it whether you wanted to be or not. Anyhow, I had transferred my parole down here to Florida. I had a job. And when I went there, I worked with a bunch of drunks, so I fit right in there, you know. Stayed drunk. I'd get up in the morning, first thing I'd do is get loaded. I'd head out the door and stay loaded all day, and I learned not to talk to nobody because I don't know how to talk to nobody, man. You know, I'm like a drunk mute all day long. Because if I talk to you, man, there's going to be a confrontation. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And my one goal in life at this stage of my life was not to go back to prison. You know, that was it. That was my ambition, not to go back to prison. And I tried, man. I tried not to leave that trailer, you know. And the truth is, I was just as much in prison, man, in the world as I was when I was in prison, you know. I'm in this trailer, but I can't leave. You know, because I know if I go somewhere, well, that's the thing, I don't know if I go somewhere what's going to happen. But it usually ain't good. It might not happen the first night, but eventually I'm going to be sitting in jail waiting on the bus, you know. But anyhow, I did leave out of there one night, and this is my last one. I was over there on Himes Avenue in Tampa, in some apartments there. I was up on the second floor. There was a bunch of people getting loaded there. I mean, why else would I be there? You know what I mean? And, of course, they didn't show it to me, believe that, but I saw this half a garbage sack full of cocaine, and I decided I needed more than they did. So I went out to my truck, and I got a shotgun. I come back up in there, and I throwed everybody up against the wall there, and I was letting the people I knew off the wall. Well, this one dude come off the wall. Actually, I did know him, but I didn't really want him off the wall yet. And when he did that, I throwed a shotgun on him. And when I did that, the guy on the end over here went and dove out the window. And it was all buttholes and elbows after that. But I did get that sack. And I got to tell this before I forget it, man. You know, when I got sober early on, man, this dude that I throwed the shotgun on was in an AA meeting there. And you don't really know what's going to happen here, and you know, in a circumstance like that. So after the meeting, the guy approached me, and we got to talking, and he assured me that that night was one of the reasons he came into Alcoholics Anonymous. So, man, you never know who you're helping. That's about. And it's been my experience that it is action more than words. You know what I mean? That's true. That's true. So anyway, I woke up March 18th, 1990, man, on the floor of that trailer. I'd run out of everything. When I got going with all that, I weighed about 190 pounds, and now I weigh 140 pounds. And funny how that works, isn't it? And still trying to act bad, you know, at 140 pounds. I think 50 pounds of that was the hair on my head. But I woke up that morning, and I really believe it was a God thing. Matter of fact, I know it was. One of the first thoughts I had that morning when I woke up was when I was in Reidsville there, they had AA. But I never went, you know, because I was way too bad and cool back in them days to go to AA meetings. But these guys that went to Alcoholics Anonymous, man, they totally saved my life, and they never said a word to me. That's, once again, action and no words. You know, I had what the big book talks about, contempt prior to investigation, with everything, man, you know. And I know I always use this example. It's a good one, man. Like, there was a famous preacher that got in some trouble, and it went through him. Everybody in prison heard about it. So I can't wait, you know, for these guys to go to chapel so I can holler at all of them what idiots they are, you know. Because this one preacher has screwed up in my eyes, I can condemn all religion. That's the way I was with everything. They need to be listening to me anyway. I'm in the hole over here hollering. I know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? And these guys in AA, though, man, I looked for something wrong with them. Couldn't find nothing, man. They were something else, man. They were getting out when they were supposed to. That was pretty wild. That really impressed me more than anything else. The rest of us, man, we were acting like we was 5 years old. You know, they had game time back then, but every time I'd get to catch a case, man, they'd drop my game time and give me some more time. I'd go over there to M dorm, they'd throw me in the hole, I'd do a little bread and water. That's the way I was doing time, man. Used to get arrested for everything you get arrested for out here, you know, plain drunk, theft by taking. I stayed loaded the whole time I was in prison. I got arrested for murder when I was in prison. That's not unusual. You just ain't going to read about it in the paper, you know. Like I say, man, that's how I was doing time. And so anyway, man, on March 18th of 1990 there, I woke up, and because of those guys in my head there, they popped in my head, I called Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I did not know it when I made that call, but that's my sobriety date until you see me sitting here right now, man. I had no clue of that day, man. I just had an anniversary a little bit ago. It was 25 years, man. Who would have thunk it, man? You know what I'm saying? Nobody would have seen me come gagging into AA that day, man, I promise you. And this was the first time in my life that I went somewhere, man. Nobody threw me in Alcoholics Anonymous and locked the door. It was the first time I walked in there because I felt like I couldn't take another damn step in my skin, man. I mean, I was dying, you know? I mean, I've been trying to stop getting loaded since I was a kid, man. I knew what I was when I was a kid. And I'd really been trying to stop, man. I mean, every bit I could. And I couldn't stop. And I finally reached a point in my life where I quit trying. And boy, that's misery there. That's when I really got miserable, because I'm like, man, is this all there is? And you know, I'd have a thought pop in my head, well, tomorrow I'll do this. And my next thought was, man, you ain't going to do nothing, man. You ain't going to do squat, you know. And I just really, man, would just as soon have died. And I didn't have the guts to kill myself, but that's why you see me running around robbing drug dealers and stuff, man. My whole attitude was like, kill me. You know, and I really meant that, man. And anyhow, that's the way I was when I come in there. And that's the beauty of it, man, because I was absolutely blessed to have that attitude. That gift we talk about of desperation, man. Oh, man. I'd have done anything except hear about God. You know what I mean? And so what I did, man, I lived in the woods behind... I got sober Sobrenity over there on Waters Avenue. It was in a different spot than it is now. But I lived in the woods back there, and the reason I did that is I knew if I went anywhere, I'd get loaded. It was that simple. And I'm going to tell you what happened to me, man. It was a spiritual thing for me, man. My first night there, I don't know about you guys. I mean, I never went to detox. I got sent to some places for detox, but I never, you know, detoxed myself, man. I always detoxed by flopping around like a fish for a couple days, which is what I was doing behind Sobrenity there with a high fever and sweating like a stuck pig, all cramped up. And I did this very often, until I could finally get back up and hurry up and do all I could do to get back in that position again. You know what I mean? That's what I did with my life, you know. So I'm back there doing my flop, and this dude I never seen before, man, he comes up and he says, yo, man, you got a high fever. He says, I got some isopropanol alcohol in my truck. He said, if I rub you back with that, it'll help bring your fever down. And this guy did that, you know. Guy I never saw before in my life, you know. There was another guy he used to walk around that club with me at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was too selfish and stupid to realize this guy was staying with me till the bar shut down. Cripple guy too, because let me tell you, man, I couldn't imagine that, you know, where I come from, man, that ain't gonna happen. I mean, nothing was for free where I come from, man. The dessert on my tray, I got something for it, a cigarette. Wasn't for free, you know. And I really believe stuff like you got to get that other guy before he gets you, you know. I believe that with all my heart. All this negative stuff, I believe that was, you know, that was really the way things were. And here's these people, man, you know, they're really throwing a wrench in all that, you know. And I used to come in there, man, and I'd have cockleberries in my hair, and you know, my mama always told me, if you can smell yourself, everybody else been smelling you for 3 days, right? And here would come people running to me from the other side of the room, give me a big old hug, tell me to keep coming back. Do you hear that? A guy like me, man, you know? And I tell you what, man, they just loved me to death. A guy took me to his house to take a shower, which I really believe he did that for the group, not me. But... for whatever reason, Now listen to me, man. I'm in AA and I haven't worked a step. I don't believe in God. I'm just hanging out in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? That's it. And when I went to this guy's house, is the first time that I can remember that I wasn't looking at his stereo and his TV and his old lady and what window I can get in later, their car, all that stuff, man. You know, I was there, man. I took a shower and I said, "Thank you, man. I really appreciate you, you know, let me." Then I meant it. That's just from hanging out in AA. That's why I always say, by the grace of God, man, I'm standing here sober, you know. And like I said, and this always blows my mind even talking about it, you know, here I'm surrounded by all this. I'm in AA, and I'm listening to people's stories that, you know, they were in some dumpster somewhere, and now they're the president of U.S. Steel. You know what I mean? They've changed so much. And my sponsor mentions God, and I get on a high horse. That blows me away, man. Here I am living in the woods, you know what I mean? I'm eating a donut if somebody brings one, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to hear about that, you know? Ain't that something? And my sponsor told me, man, he said, "Yo, hey, go drink some more liquor. Are you ready to hear about it?" You know? Because these steps is going to save your ass. And unless I'm not reading them right, they kind of go, God, 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 God. And, you know, and that's exactly the way they go. And we were sitting there at a picnic table that I'd been sleeping under the night before, you know. And I had no trouble with step one, you know. And step one is like, hey, no shit, man. You hear that? You know, I got that one down, you know. And I'd been knowing that for a long time. And but then now all of a sudden, there's a way, man. There's a step two and a three, and if there's a way, there's a real way to get out of this pit, you know. And that's what he told me, man, that day. He says, you know, we're talking about step two, and I was saying I don't want to hear about it. And he says, "Man, I got to ask you one thing." He looked around where I was living. He looked at me, and he goes, "What is it that you're holding on to that you don't want to give this a try?" You know what? I heard that, man. I heard it. What the hell? What was I holding on to, man? And that's all it took. That's all it took was the willingness to try this. I used to ask my sponsor, "Well, what am I praying to?" He said, "Who gives a damn? Just do it. Just do it, man." You know. And after a while, I'm like, "I don't think this is working." And he says, "Well, have you drank?" No. No. It's working, you know. And I tell you, man, it's, you can't put your finger on what happens, you know. You just can't do it, but it does. It just really works, you know. I'm working these steps, you know what I mean? I'm going to all these meetings. I was going in meetings all day long when I got sober, man. Sabrina used to have them from 6 in the morning to midnight, and I was at every one of them. I lived there, you know. I want to tell you a little story about that, man. I heard How It Works read a million times. You know, all day, 6-7 times a day, how it works. And I was like, why do they do this, man? You know, what are we all, idiots? We got to hear this every, you know what I mean, every 2 hours. So I had made up my mind I was going to get drunk one night back there. And I had left the premises, and there's a real good chance it would have happened. There's an ABC liquor store around the corner. And I come around that corner, and I said, "Hey, I seen ABC. A, that no human power could do it for me. B, see," and I said, "Okay, that's why we read it, man." And I went back, saved my life, man. You know, saved my life doing that. Anyway, I'm working these steps, and now things are happening, man. I done got me a car, man. I got a job. That's a miracle, man. I did very little. I'm just now been working long enough to get some Social Security, I think. But I'd work a job, I'd get paid, and I'd spend it in 15 minutes. You know, I'm like, this really ain't for me, man. That's why I rob places. You know what I mean? The hours were short, the pay was great, but the vacations were hell, man. It was just killing me, them damn vacations. But anyway, I'm working these steps, and I'm going to work, man, and I can barely make it, man. I'm like, you know, in Tampa, I never knew there was so many bars until I got sober. They're everywhere. I'm like, oh, my God, man, am I going to make it to work, you know? And I know, man, I know some roads I can go down and get in some trouble, too, man. I know where the lot is at. I know where everything's at, you know? And I'm like, oh, my God. And I get to work, and everybody I work with except me is getting loaded all day. 15-minute break, lunchtime, I'm sitting there going, man, am I going? But I'm doing it. Working these steps. So one day I'm going to work, man, and I look over and there's a bar there, and I realize I ain't looking at them no more, you know. And when I get to work, man, when these guys are running out souse as much as they can in 5 minutes, I'm thinking, God, man, I ain't got to do that no more. You hear me? And I'm still that way, man. I've been sober quite a few days, and I'm still great. Yeah, come on in. We're talking about punctuality tonight. I still to this day, man, I'll be taking a shower. I got hot water going like crazy, man. I wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning. If I want a cold drink, I just walk right out to the refrigerator and get one, you know. When I go to the bathroom, I ain't got 150 people watching me, you know. I still think about all that, man. For many, many years, I didn't have that, you know. Because freedom is sweet, man. I got to tell you. And, you know, I was sent to the state nut house where I was diagnosed as manic depressive and a sociopath type 2, which I don't even know what the hell that is, but it probably ain't very good, I could bet on that. And manic depressive ain't too happy, I would think. And they were right. They were right, man. I knew a lot of miserable people, but I think I topped them all. You know, that was my job to feel sorry for Jim, you know. So anyway, man, I'm going to work. I'm going somewhere, man. Anyway, I'm in my truck, and I'm going down the road. I got the radio on. I look in the mirror, and there's somebody bouncing in the seat singing. It is me. Me, man, the manic depressive, bouncing in the seat singing, happy for no apparent reason, man. Just digging, you hear me? Digging life. It's like I come back to life, man, you know? It's like you know what I'm saying? I can only put it like I remember when I was a little kid when school would let out for the summer. I'd come batting out of there, bat like a bat out of hell, man, running, jump on my bicycle. I'm like, I'm out of here. That feeling, man, you know? I get that all the time in sobriety, man, still. You know, I hope I never lose it, man. I'm going to tell y'all, you know, just nothing but good stuff's happened to me since I got sober. My parole officer calls me one day. Oh, let me tell you, man, things are different when you get sober and you see your parole officer. Totally different thing going on now, man. You know, when I used to see my parole officer when I'd get loaded, I wouldn't say my name. They'd have to crowbar every little bit of information out of me. Man, Okay, yep. That's the way I talk to my parole officer. I get sober, man. I'm coming, hey, what's shaking, everybody? How y'all doing? Y'all want me to drop some urine today? It's all good. I'm ready. You know. And my sponsor calls me. My parole officer calls me at work, said he wants to see me. And I swear to God, in the back of my head, I'm thinking I'm getting off parole. But I am a good alcoholic, man. When I went there, I'm checking. I'm driving around, man. I'm looking for the paddy wagon. You know what I mean? This DNA is coming out now. You know what I mean? It'd be something 30 years ago, and here I sit, you know. But, you know, I'm a free man today because I face whatever's there. And I go in there, and he asks me, he says, you got lawyers working on your case? I said, oh, yeah, man, my lawyers are tripping over each other. No, I don't have any lawyers. And he says, you're off parole, man. I got it sitting here stamped. He says, I can't even tell you how this happened, man, because I was on parole indefinitely, is what they said. And that could be a long time, you know. And here I am off. And I tell you what, man, I called my parole officer for 3 months after I got off parole. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it, man. It's the first time since I was a little kid that I wasn't locked up or on parole. He finally told me to leave him alone, you know. He says, you know, you can leave the county if you want, even. You know, I mean, you know, harassing the guy. But it's beautiful, man. I'll tell you all a story. My mother once told me that she prayed that she died before my father did because she didn't know what I would do to her if he wasn't there to protect her. And the same woman got very ill, man, and I was sober. And, you know, guess who got to take care of her? It was me, man. And that's the one reason I can live with myself today, you know. She come live with me, and you do all the things you never think you're going to have to do. You know, I carried her from room to room. I fed her. I changed her diapers, man. I talked to her. I got to know her as a person, not just my mother. You know, my mother, I would call when I was in jail. That's about it. I need some cigarettes. I need you to call the governor They got me over here on death row. Hadn't heard from me in 10 years, you know what I mean? But yeah, sure, son. She used to drive many, many miles to see me at that prison, man, and I'd be in the hole when she got there, and I couldn't have any visitors. And I finally told her, just don't come no more, man. Just don't do it. You know? And she didn't. I mean, it was a waste of time. And I got to take care of her. You hear me? That's like I say, man. That's another reason I could live with myself. I finally got to be a son to her, you know, which is all hell she ever wanted, man. She used to take that mama day and then kiss it, and she said, "You keep going to them A&A meetings, man." You know, because she knew it was for real this time, you know. And but I tell you what, man, we'd really do a number on them, man. Every time I hugged my mother, every time she'd go, smelling for that liquor, man. You know, you get so used to it, you know. Because we do, man. I used to say, hey, I don't hurt nobody, man. I hurt a lot of people, man. As a matter of fact, if I knew you 15 minutes, I probably owed you some kind of an amend. You know, the way I used to be, man. I'm just going to shoot real quick, man, how it was. When I grew up in Georgia, man, I grew up kind of like my buddy Jared there, man. I was getting loaded when I was a baby. Then my mom used to give me a shot of liquor in my baby bottle. They used to put vodka and cherry Coke or Benadryl in a Coke for the kids. You know, I had ADD, which they didn't call ADD back then. They called you a pain in the ass. And they would whip your ass till you sat still on the couch. And if you called somebody, they'd come over there and whip your ass too, you know. There was nobody to call. But there was a lot of abuse in my home, man, physical and mental. And it used to really bother me, man, that I couldn't protect my mother or my sister. I got an older brother and sister. My brother died real young from this disease. My sister died about a month ago. She had spent almost her whole life in a state nut house in Louisiana. And she finally got out of there long enough to go to a nursing home to die, you know. And I got to tell you something, man, that could have been me. It could have been the other way around, you know what I mean? She could have been me and I could have been her. The difference is I come gagging into Alcoholics Anonymous, man, and got this wonderful program. A lot of people that saved my damn life. That's the only difference, you know. I'll tell you something else, man. The women were the tough people in my family, man. My sister was tougher than nails, man. I got to tell you. If you go to that nut house where she was, every nurse on there have a story about what she did, man. I'm telling you, she could hit you like a mule kicking too, man. And I remember my mother tried to make a Georgia, like a Southern Belle out of her, you know. And we'd be out fighting and rolling in the dirt, and we'd come in the house, and she'd say, "Man, I am sweating like a pig here." And my mother would say, honey, women don't sweat. They shine." And she'd say, "Well, I'm shining like a fucking horse, Mama. I whipped somebody's ass today." And anyway, that's the way she was, man. And like I say, it could have been the other way around. They turned me on to getting loaded, man, when I was very young, man. My mother was 45 when I was born, and my brother and sister was way older. They was already getting loaded. They used to give me acid when I was a kid and all that. I used to run around the house tripping. That was always good. And I used to wake up. I thought the whole world drank growing up, you know. I'd wake up to this whole house full of liquor bottles and beer cans, and I'd be the first one up because I was young enough to not be the one that passed out, and I'd be knocking everything down that was left in the bottle. And, you know, a good dose of cigarette and ashes in the bottom of a beer can was worth every bit of it. I know I'm the only one that ever did that. And by the time I was 14, I was shooting dope, and I shot everything, man, that could cook. I shot acid, I shot heroin. I was getting heroin from Vietnam, the first thing I done. And it liked to kill me, man. When I got into that, that's all I really lived for. That's my story, really, man. I just as a kid, man, I'd rob a liquor store, cops would be passing to go to that liquor store, I'd be peddling off to rob another one, you know. So I had over 20 felonies as a juvenile. And I grew up in reform school. I grew up in, you know, boys' homes, reform schools. So I was in a juvenile prison when I was 17. for guys 17 to 22. I think I had a black eye for 5 years, man, because I had to prove to everybody how bad I was. And you know what, man? I know today somebody that really feels that way ain't got to prove it all the time. They can just walk through life being cool with it, you know? You know, as a good example, here's what I learned in AA in a nutshell. Used to, man, if me and somebody were walking toward each other in a tight space, this is a big event happening. Who's going to get out the damn way? Yeah, this is huge, man. I got to tell you, I'm not kidding. It ain't going to be me. I ran into a mirror in a bar one night because this asshole wouldn't move, you know? And this was a big deal. Who's got the respect to? Who's going to get out the way, man? And now I just get out the way. And the dude walks by and it's no big deal, man. You hear me? What I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, man, is just really to be the best person I can be, try not to hurt nobody, and pass this on. And I've been really blessed, and man, in a million ways, you know. I never dreamed I'd have the life I have today. You know, I pat myself on the back for doing stuff everybody, regular people, have been doing their whole life, you know. Go to work, you know what I mean? Do all the regular stuff, man. And this is the easier, softer way. But I got stuff, I got the thing, man, that you can't buy, you know. I got the trust of people, man. I trust people. You know what, man? I used to go to jail. You get that one phone call, I had not one person to call. I just hand them back the phone, man. They locked me up, bro. Ain't nobody coming up here. Now, I can tell you what, man. Just like you know, man, I call 100 people right now. They'd all be here. And they know I would be there for them, man. You can't buy that stuff. When my mouth's moving, I'm not lying. You know, they used to be a bitch, you know. I couldn't remember what the hell I told everybody. All the bullshit, you know what I'm saying? I ain't got to worry about it. My life today is an absolute open book, man. One of the worst things that used to happen to me is somebody would come up to me and say, "Ain't you Jim Helm?" I'd be, "Oh, hell. What did I do to this guy or his mama, you know, or his brother?" Or, you know what I mean? It's not like that no more, man. I go to the same places, you know. Now when the cop pulls me over, "Officer Tibbs, how are the wife and kids? How y'all doing?" "Okay, sure, I'll pay you that." Used to, man. Hey, cop behind me. Hey, man, it could literally be life and death before this thing's over with, you know. Anyhow, I got to tell y'all, y'all always good to talk to, man. I love this meeting a lot, man. I love the YPG, man. This group's really doing more in AA than anybody else, the way I see it, you know. And I always really, I mean it, man. I love to come here. I get to see a bunch of my friends. And I just want to thank y'all. I want to thank God for getting me here to Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank you guys for getting me to God. Thanks a whole lot for letting me share.